Chofches Elul, Tuesday the 27th of September, Rabbi Akiva Tatz, Rosh Hashanah, the new you.
Let's try and take a look for a few minutes at the subject of Rosh Hashanah. Try to deal with the classic problem, that is the question of why we don't do tshuva on Rosh Hashanah, right? The question, the day is a day of din, life is hanging in the balance. You would think that if there's one time to clean up your act, so to speak, come right, you know, cry out in an effort of self cleansing and trying to look as good as possible at the moment of a din, you would think that would be the way to do it, and yet we don't do that at all. The Matzah is full of one theme only, and that is the theme of Hashem is King, Loichal Kol Olam Kuloi, and somehow that goes together with the shofar that needs to be understood as well. That's the issue. Why is it that we're not doing... Yes, it's true, we prepare beforehand, Elul's time of tshuva, we do it afterwards, but why is Rosh Hashanah not a time of tshuva? And to make matters worse, the famous question of the fact that we do it later. You do tshuva later in Yom Kippur, which seems to be, of course, the wrong order. Why are we doing it that way? No sensible lawyer would suggest ignoring your case and then trying to win it on appeal later. Right? That would not be the way to do it. No sensible doctor would ignore an opportunity to prevent an illness, thinking that he may be able to cure it later. Why is it that the day when the spotlight, so to speak, is on us, and the judgment is taking place, and the judgment is really nothing other than an exposure to what you are, the din is simply a revealing of what it is that a person is. Let's speak about this for a moment. You know that it says that three books are open, right? Three svarim. What are these three books? What are these three books? What are they? The Sefer Yetzirah says that the world is created as three books. The Sefer Yetzirah, one of the Mishnah, Sefer Yetzirah says that the world is a sefer v'sipur. That's what the world is. The world is a sefer. The world is really a sefer Torah. You know, the sefer Torah, a sefer Torah is really the map, or the genetic, the blueprint, if you like, that results in the world. Two ways you can look at the sefer Torah. You can look at the sefer Torah, you can look at the world. Hashem is revealing the world. It's a big hagba. Right? You're looking at the world, you're really looking at a sefer Torah. And these three books are the books, the same three books that create the world, whatever they are. Those are the books that open in Rosh Hashanah. And your hand writes means that simply what you are becomes revealed.
Which
are these three books? What are the three books? It's not our subject directly now, but I say this. The three books that are open in Rosh Hashanah, the first is the book of the writer, and the second is the book of the reader. Then there's the indeterminates, people who don't know how to read. When a book is written, it's written by the one who writes it. But the reader doesn't always see what the writer intended. The writer writes a book. You come and read it. You read it according to what you want, right? Those are the three books. That's the problem. The problem is the book of Tzadikim is those who are able to read the book that the writer wrote. The book of Rishayim are those who read the book they want to read. Right, when Hashem wrote the original book, that was the book of the Torah, one person was able to read it correctly, Avraham Avinu. He was able to read the book the way it was written. Right? That's called Sifrei Tzadikim. Sifrei Rishayim is a person who reads the book the way he wants to read it, not necessarily what's written. The din of Rosh Hashanah is simply the reading of the book. How accurately are you reading it according to the way it was written? And those are the three books that are open. And since it's a day of din, where life hangs in the balance, why is it that we don't make an effort to come clean, so to speak, on that day? Why is it that we leave it till later? I think the answer to this, and I think should be the focus for Rosh Hashanah completely, the focus here, the concept is that Rosh Hashanah is a din really on only one thing. There's only one single agenda for Rosh Hashanah. And tshuva, which is the act, the mitzvah of correcting all the details, this, you know, the time you weren't respectful enough to your parents, or the time you didn't speak nicely enough to your wife, or the day you kicked the dog, or whatever it is. I'm sure this is all completely academic here, the Torah way, it's all irrelevant to you. But if you ever meet anyone who has ever done anything imperfect, you're about to tell him what to do. The tshuva is the work of correcting all those things. Rosh Hashanah is not that. Rosh Hashanah is in a completely different agenda. What is the agenda of Rosh Hashanah? The deepest axiom we have in the process of moving through time in Torah life is that every moment, every node of time we pass through is a revisiting of what happened then before. The non-Jewish world has a concept of anniversaries. A certain thing happened at a certain time, so when that time rolls around, you celebrate it because it happened then, right? You have an anniversary of your marriage. got married at a certain time. Every year you have to revisit and celebrate the disaster, or I mean the event. You have to go back to the event, and you have to celebrate it because this is the time. So you do that, but that's not the way we think about it in Torah. In Torah thinking, we understand that an event happened at a certain time, not because it happened to be then, but because the time made it possible. Pesach happens in the springtime, not because it happened historically then, so we revisit it every springtime. Pesach happened then because the springtime makes it possible. Avraham Avinu served matzah to the malachim who visited him, even though there was no historical reason of matzah not bread having arisen. That happened centuries later. But he was so in tune, he was so able to read the Sefer of the Kosev, he was so able to accurately read the book of the writer, that he knew that this time of year gives rise to an Indian called Pesach, and that means matzah. In other words, what happens at points in time, those things happen then because the time makes it possible. The year, if you like, is cycles of energy. And we are riding the waves of particular energy at particular times. When we live through a Pesach, a Shavuos, a Sukkos, whatever it is, we're reliving an event that happened then, and therefore it can happen again. The whole point of immersing oneself in the experience is because not just like you're able to be Mekabel Torah at Shavuos, like it happened once, every year that same energy, that recreation, it's not a circle, of course, it's a spiral. From one perspective, on a personal level, it should be a spiral. Every year you revisit the same point at a higher level in your own development. In terms of Yerida Sederis, it's a spiral going down. Every year we visit the same point in time at a lower level of Ruchlias until we finally get down to the feet, which is a completion of the Tzuras Adam. But nevertheless, it is a cycling through energies of time. And what happened in Rosh Hashanah was only one thing, and that was the formation of the human being. Rosh Hashanah is the time when the human being was created. And therefore what we revisit on Rosh Hashanah is only one thing. It is a return to the point of origin. Only a return to the point. Zichronus means to go back. Zikaron. Zikaron's gematria zera. That means to go back into the seed. To go back into the nucleus, the moment of creation is to go back then. Shofaris takes us back. We'll explain that as well. Malchius is going back to the original agenda. What happened in Rosh Hashanah was only one thing, the formation of the human being. And the din of Rosh Hashanah is simply a debate about shall he be created or shall he not. Now the Medrash puts it this way. When Adam was created, Hashem said, Na'aseh Adam. Na'aseh Adam. So the Medrash asked the obvious question, Na'aseh, who's us? Na'aseh Lashon Rabbim, who's us? If there's one thing we've fixated on in Yiddishkeit, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, who's the us? So there are many Medrashic takes on this, but one that's very beautiful to understand in this context is the Medrash says that when Hashem came to create Adam, he consulted his Midas. Emes and Stocker and Mishpat and D, all the Midas that he wanted to put into the human being, he consulted. And some said, Yibore, he shall be created. And some said, Olibore. Emes said, do not create the human being, he'll be full of lies. Stocker said, create the human being, he'll give Stocker. And there was a debate. Some said, Yibore, he should be created. And some said, Olibore. And when these Midas began this debate, they ended up locked in an almighty, unresolvable conflict. And while they were arguing, Hashem created Adam. The wrong way to understand this Chazal, the childish way to understand this Chazal, is that he asked his midas for advice, and they couldn't solve. They became locked in a conflict that couldn't be resolved, so he had to ignore them. While they were arguing, he bypassed them. That's not what Chazal is saying. Chazal is saying this, Hashem asked his midas for advice, and he took their advice. What was their advice? An almighty unresolved conflict, and that's what he created. Adam, the human being, is a battlefield of warring intentions, of warring motivations, and that's what you are. He didn't ignore their advice. What he created was an unresolved conflict. Who resolves the conflict? Who resolves the conflict? You. You know, there's another take on that. There's another angle on that medrash. Na'aseh Adam means me and you. Na'aseh Adam means, at one level it means me and my midas. On another level it means me and you. I'll create you halfway, and you become the completion of your own creation. So that in the end we'll be a partner. I'll give you the wherewithal. And you, Adam, you mushroom your own creation, right? That's just the deeper level of the same idea. And therefore what happens on Rosh Hashanah is only one thing, the same debate takes place. Yibore Aliyah, that's all that takes place on Rosh Hashanah. It's not a time for tshuva, it's not a time for details. What happens on Rosh Hashanah is only one thing, Yibore Aliyah. And therefore the work of the day is going back to that point of origin and making sure that that issue is resolved. It's the only work of the day. You know, what is Malchus, Zichronus and Shofaris? Right, which is what we do. It all boils down to Malchus really. Probably, I think Malchus is going to show. I think it is Machshava Dibur Maaseh. Nefesh HaChayim says that all human activity falls into three categories. The Maharal works on this many times. Also, Machshava Dibur Maaseh. This is a return to the Nekuda of Malchus in all three dimensions. Zichronus is really going back to the concept of Hashem being Melech in Machshava. That's zikoron. It's a work of the mind to go back to the point of origin. Shofaris is a going back to the point of origin in dibur. That's the expression of sound. And malchus is going back to the thing itself, right in maaseh. That means Hashem is b'maaseh melech of the world. This idea of malchus means the following thing. There's one thing to get a hold of firmly for Rosh Hashanah to be zoicha, and Rosh Hashanah has to be this idea and this idea only. Chazal say you can offer Hashem a bribe. Rosh Hashanah is a legitimate form of bribe. You can say, you can offer Hashem a bribe. What's the bribe? You stand in Rosh Hashanah and say, Hashem, there's only one thing you need me for. There's only one thing He needs us for. He doesn't need you to make the sunshine, contrary to what you might believe. He doesn't need you to make the rain fall. He needs you only for one thing, that's to make Him king. Ein melech b'layam. He needs us only for one thing, and that's Ein melech b'layam. The incredible aspect of the Bria is that He made Himself vulnerable, as it were, to our being mashlim the Bria, to be mamlich Hashem. Ein melech b'layam means that you have to use your freedom of will, the tool that you can use to reject this option. You have to use your freedom of will to be mamlich. That's why we say every morning, Ki Lashem ha-melucha u'moishel bagoyim. Melucha means we accept Him. True, after we've accepted His malchus, we make it incontrovertible and immutable. That means we give Him absolute power. But to be mamlich Hashem means we use our freedom of will. To be mechabed somebody, to be mechabed somebody, to raise Hashem to that level, can only be done by somebody who is free not to. Moshe al-Bagoyim means Hashem, He rules them by force. The covet of Malchus is only, you can only, kibbut can only be given by one who doesn't have to do so. If I hold a gun to your head and I say I'm great, and you say I'm great, that's not a covet, that's humiliation. When you live in a country where the dictator says, I want statues of me in every town square, and I want my pictures on all the walls to mechabed me, there's no greater humiliation. When he turns his back, they spit on him. Right? Covet is only given by one. Chazal say that the only person who's honored is a person who flees from honor. Only if you flee from honor are you honored. Once a man came to the Chazon Ish and he said, Rebbe, I've been fleeing from honor my whole life, it still hasn't found me. The Chazon Ish said, yeah, because you're looking over your shoulder. It has to be a genuinely flee from. A person who seeks honor and wants to be honored, that's a humiliation. The Maral says, the reason is, because a person who's trying to be honored the whole time, that there's no greater humiliation than that. A person who's trying to be mechabed himself, that itself is such an embarrassment, such a humiliation. Real cover can only be given by somebody who's free not to. And therefore the Bria takes the form that we are created independent. We don't have to. We can give a slap in the face. And when we turn, we use our Bechira, we use our free will to be Mechabed and to be Mamlich Hashem out of free will, that makes Him a real king. And that, therefore only we can do that. If He would coerce us into doing that, it wouldn't be a covet. It would be Him speaking to Himself. Therefore He sets us at a distance and He says it's up to you. And therefore we stand in front of Hashem and Rosh Hashanah, there's only one thing you need us for. You need all we can offer you is that we can use our free will to be, that means to give up our egos and make our independence subservient to you and annul that independence that you've given us. And that is how we make you king. And therefore the agenda for Rosh Hashanah is only one thing. Hashem, there's only one thing you need me for, and it's to make you king. This is deeper than tshuva. It's not we don't do tshuva and Rosh Hashanah. We're well aware of the fact that our lives hang in the balance and we need to come clean and come right. But this is the deepest form of tshuva. It's going back to the original basic agenda. And that is Hashem, you know, if you get one day a year to speak to your boss, one day a year, you can stand on the carpet in front of his desk and say whatever you want. If you take that half hour to start negotiating a better salary and you want a better expense account, you want an office with a view, you want to be, you know, the company car, that's good, you make a bad mistake. Bad mistake. If you get half an hour to speak to the boss every year, there's only one thing on the agenda. Are you employed next year? That's the only question. Make sure you got a job next year. Once you re-establish that and you're employed, you got a job, then you can drive him crazy. You email him for the next 10 days about the salary and the expenses and the office and all that. But you look a fool doing that if you haven't got a job. Rosh Hashanah is only one thing, Hashem. I realign. It's a reboot of the system. I go back to the basic agenda. I'm here for one purpose. Boss, this is the greatest company in the world and I work for it and you need me. That's all you say, Rosh Hashanah. There's no time for tshuva, Rosh Hashanah. Tshuva's later, you take 10 days doing that, you can work it out later, you can prune all the branches, get all the details right, but that's all irrelevant if you're not going to be here. And therefore, Rosh Hashanah is only one agenda, one theme. Malchus means Hashem, you king of the world. Zichronos means you go back to the point of origin, back into the own fetal, embryonic seed situation. Shofar is the same thing, by the way. Shofar is the cry of the neshama without words. The din of the shofar is that, what's shofar got to do with this? The whole day we spend saying, Hashem, you king of the world. Then we start blowing a bugle. What does that mean? Shofar takes you back to the point of origin. Shofar takes you back to the original creation of the human being. The din of the shofar does sound like a cry. The cry is the cry of a child being born. The cry is the cry of a neshama leaving the world. Right? In Kabbalah it's written that Hashem is the tokeh. And the breath that blows into the shofar that gives the sound of a neshama coming into the world is the original breath that Hashem, the neshima, that was the neshama of Adam. When Hashem breathed life, Vayipach ba'apa nishmas chaim, that original breath that He breathed into the human being is the breath that's heard again that gives the sound of the shofar, except that it comes out as a scream. The reason is because words are always inaccurate. Words can always be misunderstood. Words, when the breath is brought into the voice, which is brought into words, the words can always be misunderstood. When you go back to a scream, a primal scream, that can never be misunderstood. Words can always be distorted. But there's no misunderstanding the meaning of a scream of a child in the night. There's no misunderstanding that. The din of the shofar cannot be misunderstood. You know, whenever the Torah talks about voice, it means nevuah. When it talks about words, whenever Torah talks about words, it's talking about speaking. When it wants to talk about deeper than words, it talks about kol, the voice itself, right? When Avram Avinu misunderstands Sarah Imenu, yeah, and Hashem says, no, you're making a mistake. She speaks emes. He said, Shma b'koy la. Not, don't listen to her words. Listen to her voice. Then Avram realized she was talking nevuah. Kol always means that, yeah, that scream cannot be misunderstood. Nevuah is always called a kol, because the kol, Hashem says to the Novi, cry b'garoin al tachsoich. Cry out in your throat. It doesn't say speak words in your mouth. That's can always be distorted. The Rambam says when a Navi speaks, you don't hear a person talking about something, you experience what he says. Nevuah can't be misunderstood. Nevuah is so accurate. A Navi is reading the book exactly the way it was written. The two are perfectly aligned. There can be no misunderstanding. Therefore, when the Torah wants to talk about words that cannot be misunderstood, it doesn't call them words, it calls them kol. The kol. Kra begaroin al tachsech, kashefa harem kelecha. That's what it says to the Navi. Lift your voice like a shofar. The shofar is not possible to misunderstand. It's a scream, right, of pure... You know, the shofar has to terrify you. Shofar has to terrify you. Why? Hashem wants you to be afraid? The meaning of terror is it clears all the deep... When a person... When you're traveling at 35,000 feet above the Atlantic, and you're thinking about all the details of your business deals, and you're worried about the Southeast Asian geopolitical problems, and so forth and so on, and suddenly the wings start flapping badly, and the thing starts shaking very badly. At that time, all the details disappear. There's only one thing that remains, my life or my child. Terror takes you back. Abject fear takes you back simply to the experience of the neshama of being in the world and being alive. The din of the shofar is to take you back to the fear that clears away all the debris, all the irrelevant details. That's the reason it's nothing other than a return to the same moment. You know, the word shofar means exactly this. Shofar means the thing that we blow. Shippur means to improve, it means to develop. Shapir means beauty, spiritual beauty. Shapir of Yerushalayim, the beautiful people of Yerushalayim. Shapir means to establish spiritual beauty. And Shfir means to go back to being a fetus. Shfir b'shilya. The word Shfir, the same word as Shofar, means when a baby is conceived in the mother's womb, it's conceived in a bag of membranes and liquid that's called Mei Shafir. David HaMelech says his hands are soiled with shfir v'shilya. He's handling, right in the shilas that he's brought, he's handling shfir v'shilya. Shilya is the placenta, and shfir, shofar, that is the bag in which the child's contained. When you blow shofar, it's ascending from the words back into the voice, back into the breath, back into the primal experience, if you like, of an unborn child. And therefore, shofar is nothing other than the same theme. The day has only one theme, and it's going back to the creation. By the way, it's a universal creation. It's not specifically Jewish. The Mishnah says, "Kol ba'olam." The language is, you're going back here to your creation as a human being, before Judaism, as it were, before Yiddishkeit, before Avraham Avinu, before Torah became part of the scene. You're going back to the primal creation of the human being as a human being. The theme of the day is, "Meloch al kol ha'olam kuloi." Pesach is the other Rosh Hashanah, that's a Rosh Hashanah of the Jewish people. Pesach is only us. It's us ripped out of another nation and becoming unique as a Jewish people. Rosh Hashanah is not the formation of the Jewish people. Rosh Hashanah is the human as human. That's why it's dinar called ba'olam. I think the Taz says, why did we say meloich al kol ha'olam kuloi? Kol ha'olam kuloi. What does that mean? Why do we say that? Why do we double that up? Meloich al kol ha'olam kuloi. It's a fantastic explanation. It says like this: if we said Hashem, we want you to be meloich al kol ha'olam, kol in halacha could mean a roif. Kol could mean a roif. the din of the Torah is always, a roiv is ruboy kekuloy, always. And the svara for that, of course, is when you have a thing that's 50%, as soon as you move 51%, the whole thing falls. The reason roiv is kaver, as soon as it's 51%, about 51% falls, the whole thing falls. Therefore, yeah, you have a meat soup and a little bit of milk. Don't try this at home, but you have milk and meat. If there's a majority, or Rashi says you have 51% schach on your sukkah, the 49% is botlets. Ki'ilut's not there. There's exceptions in Pikuach Nefesh and other areas, but Roiv is one of the most basic aspects of Torah. And therefore, says the Taz, when we say Hashem Aloichal Kol Ha'olam, you might mean 51%. That would be good enough. But Rosh Hashanah, we say we don't mean that. We Aloichal Kol Ha'olam Kuloi. We don't mean, we mean 100%. We want every Papua New Guinean spear fisherman and every Chicago stockbroker and every New York dealer and every Aboriginal savage and every Golders Green savage to realize that Hashem, you are king of the world. It's not Al Pi Roiv, right? Because we mean the covenant of Malchus Shammai is that it has to extend into every nook and cranny of the world. That's the point. It's only, is there a role called Basar Yachtav? Even the Basar has to see, let alone the Neshamas. It has to go all the way down, right? Kipi Hashem Dibir. And therefore, that's the meaning. The meaning of Rosh Hashanah is there's only one agenda. There's no time for tshuva now. And it's not necessary. The tshuva on the detail is not necessary. That's not what's being looked at. What's being looked at is only one question. Yibore or Al Yibore. And therefore, the way to be zoicha in the din of Rosh Hashanah is to do nothing other than go back to that point, go back to that point of origin, which is nothing other than a re-establishment of the reason for being here. And therefore, tshuva is coming later. Tshuva is really the details. You know, the Mishnah says that a person is like a tree. A person is like a tree. It's one of the reasons we don't cut a child's hair till he's 3 years old, just like the first 3 years of fruit. And one of the ideas that's brought on this is that you can have two kinds of a tree. You can have a tree that's planted in a good place, but some of its branches can hang over bad soil. Or you could have a tree that's planted in a bad place, but some of its branches can hang over into good soil. What does it mean? It means that if a tree is planted in a good place and actually it's nurturing, it's nourishing itself from good soil, but some of its branches hang into a bad place, it means even the biggest tzaddik has done some avaris. He's got some branches that hang over into the bad place. All it takes is a little pruning. Yes, prune off the branches and you reveal the thing completely, consistently as what it is. This is one of the reasons why tzaddikim suffer. One of the reasons why tzaddikim suffer is because every tzaddik has got some avaris and Hashem pays him out in this world of suffering. So that when he's clarified in a world of absolute existence, he's only good. And then you get Roshoim. A tree's planted in a bad place, it's nurturing itself from essentially bad soil. But even the worst Rosha has mitzvahs. Right? There was a book a few years ago written about an American gangster, a brutal, lethal gangster. Right? The name of the book was, But He Was Nice to His Mother. Even the worst criminal has got some mitzvahs. This is one of the reasons why Rishoyim sometimes have a wonderful life. It's a disaster. It looks like they're having tremendous bracha. Actually, what's happening is the branches are being pruned. They're being paid for their mitzvahs in this world so that there's nothing left of them and they're utterly destroyed in the next world. Of course, there's a side question here. We don't have time for fully, but there's a side question. How's that fair? After all, a mitzvah is a mitzvah. How can Hashem pay them out for mitzvahs in this world? The klal is high mitzvah, high al-malekah. There's no reward for a mitzvah in this world. By the way, the reason for that is, why is there no reward for a mitzvah in this world? Because this world isn't big enough to pay for one. A mitzvah is worth an infinite value. This world is a finite world. Well, Victor Miller used to give the example. He used to say, imagine you're traveling through, I always think of the South African equivalent, if you're traveling through the Karoo, you know, in South Africa there's a massive desert called the Karoo. Right? You're traveling hundreds and hundreds of miles on your way to Cape Town from Johannesburg, traveling through the Karoo. You have in your pocket a check for 100 million rand. Okay? And as you pass through a little village in the Karoo, which consists, the whole village is one shack. You know, it's the general store, it's the police station, it's the jail, it's the post office. That's what they look like, those little villages. You're thirsty, you want to drink a Coke. You go into the store, you give your fellow check for 100 million rands, you want to cash it, the guy passes out. He's never seen that much money, he's like, you're not going to get your Coke. When you get down to Cape Town, you can walk into any bank, they'll cash 100 million rands for you. Driving through this world, you have one mitzvah in your pocket, it's worth a currency that can't be paid out here. The reason there's no reward for mitzvahs in this world is the place isn't big enough. You can't cash those checks, and therefore there's no reward. So the question is, here's this Rosh, he's done some mitzvahs. Is that very unfair? Hashem's paying him out here. The answer is, he hasn't opened an account in another place. He has to open an account to get a dividend someplace. He sold out that world for this. Hashem would love to give him a reward in the next world, but he's not there. Therefore, the purpose of life is simply to build a kli, right? The He cannot deserve the reward. The reward is always to sefes murubalaika. The next world is vastly more than the work in this world can yield. The work in this world is only to build a kli. This person hasn't built a kli for that. He's only built a finite kli. And therefore, that's the way it works. So there's two kinds of tree. Planted in a good place, and it has to be balanced out, planted better. The Rambam is mashma in Hilchos Teshuvah that most people are trees planted exactly in the middle. The way he puts it is, you should see yourself on Rosh Hashanah as a person who is exactly 50.00 mitzvahs and 50.00 averos. You should even see yourself living in a town that's 50-50, in a country that's 50-50, and a world that's 50-50. One mitzvah, he says, just one mitzvah will tilt the balance, you'll save the world. The question on that Rambam is it possible that anybody's 50.000? Is there anybody? How likely is it that anybody in the world is it? But he doesn't mean that. He doesn't mean that you happen. He means most people have never moved their tree. Most people, you're born in the world as a tree planted squarely in the middle, not righteous or evil, like the Rambam says clearly here in Shiva. You planted neutral. And most people are so busy with the branches, they've never made a decision about where the tree is. Most people go through life without any policy decision about what they're here for. Bumbling along from one day to the next, survival, so they can go to work the next day, to earn enough to go to work the next day, to keep going for what? To collapse on a beach unconscious for 3 days at the end of the year so you can do the thing again. When it comes to business activities, people are very focused on goals. They have a business meeting every week with a red line on the chart that always goes up. Are we meeting our goals when it comes to their sports activities? Everything in life, there's very clear goal setting and agendas. When it comes to who you are, or what this marriage is amounting to, or what this family is becoming, or what you want from this child, there's no agenda at all. It's just mumbling along. Rosh Hashanah is not a day for pruning the branches. That will happen later. You can do it before, you can do it after. Rosh Hashanah is a day for only one thing. Where's your tree planted? One movement to the right. The Rambam doesn't mean one arbitrary mitzvah. He means one movement only. A declaration of agenda, declaration of intent. I'm here for something higher. I'm here to represent something higher. The definition of reality is Hashem. You are the definition of reality. I'm here to represent that. I'm the only one who can do that. Ye'en melech balayam. That's all that's being decided on Rosh Hashanah. Therefore, the agenda for the day is not tshuva. Tshuva is incredible, important, absolutely essential, obvious. But long before the details of tshuva, long before correcting this mistake and that mistake and this midah and that midah, has to be a setting of destination. The first element on the journey is always an establishing of destination. Then you can decide how you're going to get there and whether the journey is going to be first class, second class. Rosh Hashanah is only a day for one agenda. That is Malchus Shemaim. That's the reality of Hashem. I'm rebooting the system. I'm redefining my concept of reality. It's not all the peripheral nonsense. It's not all the details. It's the fact that you are the reality. I align myself completely with that. There's no greater assurance of life, of a din of life on Rosh Hashanah, than simply being correctly aligned with the basic agenda heading towards the basic destination.